It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station, broadcasting from Signal Hill here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it really is a nice day. It's up to 36 degrees. We're still looking for those scattered snow showers this afternoon and tonight, and for the skies to cloud up, and for getting a high near 40 today. Only about a 30% chance of precipitation tonight. But rain is likely tomorrow, mainly after 4 p.m. Increasing clouds tomorrow with a high near 39. West winds to 10 will become light and variable. Coming up on the midday news, the first finishers cross the line on the Kobuk 440 sled dog race. The Institute of Social and Economic Research has some recommendations on building maintenance for Alaska's schools. And tribal money from the COVID relief package can be a headache for administrators. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. With an average of 3 million COVID-19 vaccine doses a day now being administered in the United States, President Joe Biden is set to announce an accelerated timeline for all adults to be eligible for a shot. NPR's Tamara Keith reports the president also visited a vaccination site in Northern Virginia today.
The vast majority of states have already expanded eligibility to all people over 16 years of age or will do so soon. And Biden is shifting another goal. Instead of all U.S. adults being eligible to make vaccine appointments by May 1st, Biden will move that to April 19th. This is all part of what has been a consistent, if unstated, strategy of under-promising and over-delivering in an effort to build confidence in the government's handling of the vaccine rollout. Tamara Keith, NPR News, the White House.
A Navy base in Maryland is the latest scene of a deadly series of gun violence in the United States. The military confirming a Navy medic shot two people, one of them critically, at a business park in the Frederick area today before he fled to Fort Detrick, where police killed him. Police Chief Jason Lando reflects on this kind of violence hitting close to home.
It's terrible. It's unfortunate. It's very tragic. It's happening too frequently. Every time we turn on the TV, we're seeing something like this happen, and now it's happening in our backyard.
Meanwhile, police in Chicago say this is shaping up to be one of the city's deadliest years in recent memory. A string of gun violence now including a shooting last night on Chicago's South Side that left seven people wounded. Last week, police shot and killed a 13-year-old boy as he ran from officers while in possession of a handgun. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer announced that U.S. Capitol Police Officer William Billy F. Evans will lie in honor in the United States Capitol Rotunda April 13th. Evans was killed on Friday when a suspect rammed his car into a barrier at the Capitol. That suspect lunged at officers with a knife. A second officer was injured in the attack. The Biden administration says it expects difficult talks to revive a nuclear deal with Iran. The other world powers that signed the 2015 agreement are shuttling between the U.S. and Iran in meetings that started in Vienna today. We have details from NPR's Michelle Kellerman.
The Biden administration wants to get back into the deal, but is trying not to raise expectations. U.S. Envoy Rob Malley is in Vienna for the meetings that are focused on the steps both Iran and the U.S. will have to take. Here's White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
We expect them to have difficult portions. We expect this to be a long process. And we continue to believe that a diplomatic path is the right path forward. And there are benefits to all sides.
The Trump administration pulled out of the deal in 2018. Psaki says that left the U.S. with, as she puts it, decreased visibility of Iran's nuclear capability. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Washington.
The Dow is closed down 96 points. This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Two new cases have been reported yesterday from the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization of COVID-19, both close contact cases that were tested on the 2nd. That brings our total case count to 1,093, with 14 cases active presently here in Kodiak. The Kobuk 440 sled dog race is winding down as the first mushers arrive in Kotzebue. Tony Browning, a veteran musher from Nenana, was the first to cross the finish line, reaching Kotzebue at around 7:20 a.m. His finish comes after a harrowing weekend that saw mushers held up an ambler waiting out a ground storm. After race officials restarted the course at 2 a.m. on Sunday, it was a race back to Kotzebue. Browning said the last bit of trail from Kiana to Kotzebue was fairly calm, describing the snow as sugary and grindy. The rest of the trail was a bit tougher.
Yeah, it was a pretty tough race, for sure. Dogs did excellent. Came in motoring. I just kind of walked, or kind of ran them kind of slow down the river and a little slower across the lake, and then fired them up coming over the hills, and they just took right to it.
Browning is a fixture in rural Alaska mid-distance mushing, having won the Kobuk 440 in 2000. Four Nushagat Classics and the Nome Council 200 twice, and placing in the Kuskokwim 300. He says that this race will be his last.
I wanted this to be my last race to Kobuk, because this is my favorite race.
Although the actual winner won't be announced until race officials adjust times to account for different distances traveled during the storm, Browning said this was a good experience to go out on. Here's Browning discussing his love of the race last week ahead of the start.
It's such an extreme dog race, and it's something that a dog musher has to really manage his dog team. It's not something you can just go out there and just pull the hook and just go. You really have to know what you're doing. If you want to even just finish the race, you have to know what you're doing.
Nine more mushers are still on the trail, with Ryan Reddington and Gunnar Johnson on pace to arrive in Kotzebue at around noon today. The state of Alaska should be spending more on building maintenance for its K-12 schools, according to a recent study from the Institute of Social and Economic Research. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Institute research professor Bob Leffler authored the study. He says it's part of the Institute's ongoing analysis of Alaska's revenue and fiscal issues.
Right now, our level of funding is not sustainable. That is, our schools will degrade if we spend the money we're spending now. We need to spend more.
Leffler looked at capital projects across Alaska districts between fiscal years 2000 and 2020. Whereas many district expenses fall under a district's operating budget, large capital projects are funded by a combination of bonds and state grants. The National Council on School Facilities recommends spending 4% of a state's school's current replacement value on capital projects. That's the amount it would take to build a facility again in today's prices. Alaska's current replacement value for its almost 500 K-12 schools is $9.4 billion. Per National Council guidelines, Alaska should invest $374 million each year on school capital projects. What Alaska actually spends, Leffler found, is $249 million, 2.6% of its current replacement value. Spending was higher before the state's budget crisis. Since 2015, when the budget crisis first hit, capital spending has dropped from an average of $300 million per year to $124 million. In 2015, the state stopped reimbursing school bond debt. Prior, the state promised reimbursement between 60 and 70%. The moratorium has raised the cost for school districts that now have to fully fund bonds with their own tax revenue. Since 2015, only two districts approved school bonds: Anchorage and the North Slope. Capital spending from those districts currently accounts for almost two-thirds of the total spending for Alaska's municipal schools.
The most poignant finding is really how much our school districts have really, most of our school districts, the municipal ones, have relied on the bond reimbursement program, and how much both the moratorium on new bonds and some government vetoes of the reimbursement have affected how much communities spend on maintaining our schools. I didn't know that going into the study.
Loeffler says the picture is even more stark for municipal school districts. The legislature is mandated to spend a certain amount on funding in rural areas, so those schools are guaranteed a minimum amount of capital funding. Municipal schools aren't.
Our boroughs and cities with taxing authority spend some of their own money, and they split really how much money they spend on capital projects with the legislature. But the rural areas don't have any taxing authority, and so they're wholly dependent on the legislature.
Loeffler does say the guidelines from the National Council are just guidelines and won't account perfectly for Alaska's situation. But he says the difference between what the National Council proposes and what Alaska is actually spending is startling. He says a potential fix might be to rescind the moratorium on bond debt reimbursement. The moratorium is in place until 2025. For KDLL, I'm Sabine Pooks.
The CARES Act, the original COVID-19 relief bill that Congress passed last year, sent a lot of money to Alaska tribes, more than $300 million. Amid pandemic anxiety, the money was a godsend for remote Alaska communities. For tribal administrators, it was also a headache. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports on how Alaska's tribes spent their funds and about the mountain of new cash that's coming at them soon.
Bethel's tribe, Arutza Chachamut Native Council, or ONC, received $14 million from the CARES Act. ONC Executive Director Mark Springer remembers the moment he learned the cash was in the tribe's bank account.
I was sitting at my desk, and my chief accountant, my then chief accountant, came to the door, and he stood in my door, and he had a piece of paper in one hand, and he was clutching his chest in his other.
Of course, Springer and the accountant were elated, but it was a lot of money for a tribe of about 3,500 members. The rules for how it could be spent weren't clear at first, and originally the tribes had less than a year to spend it all. Springer says the deadline pressure was immense.
Oh, yes. There was many a time when people looked right at me and they said, Mark, are you going to be able to spend all that money before December 30th?
That was the challenge for tribes all over the country. The government followed a formula to distribute Tribal CARES Act money. 225 Alaska tribal governments received amounts ranging from $100,000 to $20 million. Some tribes didn't get their share until late May. They had to figure out how to use it wisely or lose it. ONC bought a ton of supplies and personal protective equipment and a building to put it in. Springer says ONC still has enough hand sanitizer left to fill a swimming pool. But he says at a time when stores had no Clorox or Pine-Sol, the tribe could provide.
It feels real good when a family would call up and say, hey, you know, we're COVID-19 positive and we need some cleaning supplies and some PPE. And we're like, yeah, we'll be right there.
Like a lot of tribes, ONC distributed the bulk of its CARES Act money to its members, up to $5,000 per household. The spending has to go for pandemic-related needs, so the members filled out applications to document what they needed help with. Ultimately, Springer says the money went to the community at large, in Bethel or Anchorage or wherever the member lives.
It does have a lot of economic impact because we were, you know, sending checks to landlords. We were paying electric bills and water and sewer bills and fuel bills. And so that money really went directly into the economy.
Some tribes aim to improve food security by providing freezers or ammunition and boat fuel to help tribal members hunt. Teresa Jacobson runs the Alaska Tribal Administrators Association. She says several tribes spent money to fix up old houses or community buildings to serve as quarantine facilities so that anyone coming into the village could isolate for 2 weeks.
From what I've seen, it's worked very well. And for those tribes that are doing that, I have one in particular that comes to mind, not one case of COVID since the pandemic started.
Congress later extended the CARES Act spending deadline until the end of this year. It gave tribal administrators time to catch their breath. Now they are getting ready for an even bigger pile of money from this year's COVID relief bill, the American Rescue Plan. For comparison, the CARES Act nationally had an $8 billion fund for tribal governments. The American Rescue Plan has $20 billion. $1 billion. The first billion will be divided equally among all the tribes. That comes to $1.7 million apiece. That alone will be more than most Alaska tribes got from the CARES Act. The Treasury Department hasn't announced how it will distribute the rest of the tribal government money in the American Rescue Plan. One proposal is to give each tribe another $10 million. And still, there would be billions left to distribute. Richard Peterson says he's ready. He's president of the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes.
I would say the CARES Act has kept me up at night, so I'm kind of used to it now.
His government got $20 million in CARES Act funding, more than any other Alaska tribe. Most of it was distributed to the households of its 32,000 members, about a third of whom live in southeast Alaska. For instance, the tribe sent up to $500 per child to help parents with the expenses of pandemic homeschooling, like new laptops and broadband. With the American Rescue Plan, Central Council might get two or three times as much as it got from the CARES Act. But this time, the allowable uses are broader, and the spending deadline isn't until the end of 2024. Peterson says he's grateful to have more time to strategize for economic development and recovery.
So, one, I want to honor, the intent in which it was issued. I also want to make sure that we're doing the best by our citizens, So, yeah, it all keeps me up at night.
Peterson says he's confident because Central Council has a solid record of service delivery. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Former head of the Alaska State Troopers, Jim Cockrell, has been appointed the new commissioner of the Department of Public Safety by Governor Mike Dunleavy. Cockrell said in an announcement in Kenai that he's honored.
To the employees of the Department of Public Safety, whether you're sworn or non-sworn, I look forward to working with you to make Alaska a safer place. And I will work tirelessly to get you the resources or tools needed to do your job every day.
Cockrell replaces Amanda Price, who resigned in February. Price said she was forced out over disagreements with Dunleavy over personnel and policy. Cockrell says the department will hire more troopers. He also says it's a priority to end Alaska's status as first in the country in rates of sexual assault and domestic violence.
If I leave 4, 5, 6 years, I hope I last that long, but if I can hang my hat up and say, I made a positive difference.
Cockrell was the director of the Alaska Wildlife Troopers before leading the Alaska State Troopers, retiring at the rank of colonel. He lives in Soldotna. Dunleavy says he doesn't think the confirmation process will be difficult with Cockrell. His appointment will be subject to a vote of the entire legislature in joint session. Five people have been rescued in the Alaska Range after weather prevented them from flying out over the weekend. KTNA's Philip Manning has more.
On Saturday, personnel from the Alaska Rescue Coordination Center, National Park Service, and Alaska State Troopers received word of a group of five people who were stranded with their three airplanes on the Ruth Glacier in the Alaska Range. Maureen Galtieri, public information officer for Denali National Park, says the five had already been on the glacier overnight when they called for help.
They had, from my understanding, gone in for a day trip flight seeing in the range on Friday. And weather came in quickly, and they were, they landed in the Ruth Gorge, but were unable to safely take off due to weather.
Galtieri says the group was able to communicate via satellite phone to receive weather updates, but conditions didn't improve on Saturday. With limited survival supplies, they called for help. The same weather that kept the stranded group on the glacier kept rescuers off it, however. Fortunately, the Sheldon Chalet is just a few miles away and keeps professional guides on staff. Galtieri says they were able to ski out to the stranded aviators.
They didn't need to come too far, but they brought all the necessary kind of skis, harnesses, ropes to guide these five individuals back to safety, back to warmth and food and water.
The group was expected to be flown out of the Alaska Range Monday afternoon, and it's not yet known when they'll be able to return to the glacier and retrieve the airplanes, which may have seen more snowfall in the meantime. In Talkeetna, I'm Philip Manning.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Alaska senators are working to repeal the mask requirement for fishermen. The Coast Guard will enforce it. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
A marine safety bulletin issued by the Coast Guard in late March reminds that they will enforce the requirement that all U.S. fishermen must wear masks while on the job. The Coast Guard interprets the mask requirement to apply to all commercial maritime vessels, and it requires all travelers to wear masks, even those who are vaccinated. Not doing so could mean restricted access to ports and operations, along with civil or criminal penalties. Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan at a Comfish forum vowed to get the mask rule repealed.
Now we have another stupid regulation that our fishermen need to wear masks. Senator Murkowski and I have been pressing this relentlessly. I had a call with the Coast Guard Commandant, a call with the White House guy who's supposedly in charge of all the CDC issues. We had a meeting with the head of the CDC. We are trying to explain to them, you know, no offense, but just how stupid this is and how uninformed it is. And really could be a safety issue, not with regard to COVID, but with regard to having to wear a mask when you're out on the deck of a ship in 30-foot waves trying to bring in gear.
The mask rule makes no sense, said Doug Vincent Lang, commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He said he's building support for a repeal with other coastal states.
I'm beginning to talk to some of the other coastal states that have commercial fishing activities, and I think to the extent that we can form some kind of a unified position on this issue across more than Alaska states, I think we stand a better chance in changing it, because really this is a CDC guidance which can be changed depending upon how they get policy direction from the White House. If they hear from both other coastal states in addition to Alaska, they'll probably be more inclined to do it.
Find links for feedback on the masking rule at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, who salutes and says thanks to the men and women fishing across Alaska for their hard work and dedication. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Up to 38 degrees now. We're looking for a predicted high of 40 this afternoon. And scattered snow showers, they're still saying, after 5 p.m. now. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a high of 40 going down to 30 overnight. Northwest wind 15 miles per hour tonight, gusting as high as 20. Rain's likely tomorrow, mainly after 5 p.m., increasing clouds tomorrow with a high near 39. And for tomorrow night, rain likely before 11, then a chance of rain and snow between 11 and 2 a.m., then just plain snow after 2 a.m., maybe. Winds could gust as high as 35 miles per hour overnight on Wednesday, though, from the south. Oh, turning to the west. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A surface trough will linger over the northern Gulf of Alaska through Wednesday morning, then dissipate by Wednesday afternoon. An eastern bearing front will enter the western Gulf Wednesday afternoon and move across the Gulf of Alaska through Wednesday night. Its associated 1,001 millibar low will approach 50 nautical miles northeast of Kodiak City on Wednesday evening, then move to 40 nautical miles southwest of Middleton Island by Thursday morning. I hope you were taking notes. As a result, Marmot Island, the Sitkanak, small craft advisory tonight and Wednesday for Kodiak's east side offshore. For tonight, northwest 25 diminishing to 15 after midnight tonight. For tomorrow, northeast 15 becoming southwest 25 tomorrow morning and seas building to 6 feet our east side offshore. Over on the west side in the Shelikof, small craft advisory Wednesday. For tonight, northwest 20 and seas to 5 feet. For tomorrow in the Shelikof, west 15, becoming south 25 tomorrow afternoon, seas to 4 feet. Inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays. For Chiniak Bay, we have northwest wind to 15 knots tonight, seas to 1 foot. For tomorrow, west wind 10 knots, becoming south 15 tomorrow afternoon, seas to 2 feet. In Marmot Bay for tonight, northwest 15, seas to 2 feet. And for tomorrow, west wind to 15 knots, becoming south tomorrow afternoon, seas to 3 feet. Today is Tuesday, the 6th day of April. The year is 2021. The sun rose today at 7:22 this morning. It won't set again until 9:02 this evening, giving us 13 hours and 40 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 58 seconds compared to yesterday. Looking at our local tides, we have an outgoing tide. Our next low tide will be at 5:35 p.m. here on the east side and be 0.5 feet, followed by a high tide at 12:21 a.m. just after midnight of 6.6 feet. Over on the west side, and this is Zacher Bay tides, you have a low tide coming up at 6:05 this evening of 1.5 feet, followed by a high tide at 12:33 a.m. of 11.8 feet. The Kodiak City Council will hold a work session tonight at 7:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. The meeting is open to the public and will be broadcast here on KMXT on 100.1 FM, as well as being web streamed on the city from the city website. Go to the city website for agendas, links, and meeting packets. For more information, call the clerk at 486-8636. The City Council will be holding its regular meeting on Thursday. That's also happening at 7:30 p.m., and it will also be held in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. This meeting is open to the public. We'll be broadcast here on KMXT on 100.1 FM, and will also be web streamed from the city's website, where you can find links, agendas, and meeting packets. Again, for more information, call the clerk, 486-8636. Meetings in the Kodiak Island Borough include the Women's Bay Service Area Board meeting. That's happening tonight at 5:30 p.m. in the Women's Bay Fire Hall. Also tonight at 6 p.m., the Bayside Fire Hall, Fire Protection Area Number 1 board meeting is happening. That's at 6 p.m. tonight in the Bayside Fire Hall. And on Thursday, the Borough Assembly is having their work session, and that's happening at 6:30 p.m. also at the Bayside Fire Hall. The Kodiak Police Department is aware of a current scam going around where people are calling people, claiming to be the U.S. Marshal and telling you they have an arrest warrant unless you pay a fine. The police department wants to remind you that this is a scam and that no law enforcement agency will ever call and ask for money. This is true of the IRS and the Social Security Administration as well. And since everybody has or will receive these stimulus checks, be sure to remind your more vulnerable friends and relatives that this is a scam. The Kodiak's Arts Council is having its Arts and Adventure Auction. It's Spring into Arts, the Arts and Adventure Auction, an online event happening now through just April 26th. Join them online this month for the 33rd annual Arts and Adventure Auction. And you just want to go to the Kodiak Arts Council website. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is accepting proposals to conduct commercial sport fish guide services on the Uganic River drainage located within the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge. The service will award special use permits to successful applicants through a competitive selection process. The permits will allow sport fish guide services in specific refuge use areas through December 31st, 2026. Proposals must be mailed to the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge at 1390 Buskin River Road, Kodiak, Alaska, by 4:30 p.m. April 15th. So that deadline is coming up. For more information, call 907-487-2600. 487-2600. The Powerful Public Speaking Workshops have new dates happening the 14th, 21st, and 28th of this month. And they're happening online via Zoom or at the Kodiak College Campus Center Room 127 in person. Whatever your bully pulpit or soapbox, this dynamic workshop will help you find and hone your voice to maximum effectiveness. Using time-proven strategies, you will be able to deliver powerful and persuasive messages to a variety of audiences. This course is appropriate for students 18 and up and will be conducted either in person or on Zoom. There is a fee, And for more information, contact Heather at 486-1212.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.